And they're off.
Welcome to the DCR 8 station number 8. I'm Matt Raymond.
And I am Eugene Bingham. Tēnā koutou katoa. Nō mai, haere mai, or hoki mai, for those of you who are familiar with the 8 station format. How have you been, Matt? How are the legs?
Yeah, it's hard navigating the world with broken legs. and having been hanging out at 8 stations over the weekend, and now I'm in an 8 station, a virtual 8 station. Yeah, I'm good, man, if not a little bit sore. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I too am a little bit sore, just from walking up hills. Never mind. It's what you get when you're an injured runner and you're not supposed to walk up hills, but you're just in the back country of North Canterbury and you just can't help yourself because it just looks too good. But it was a great weekend at the Skedaddle and down at Further Faster on Thursday, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was our first ever live show at Further Faster, our first ever time down at Further Faster, and we had a grand old time, and it was super fun, which you'll hear about in the fullness of this episode. But look, got some housekeeping stuff to go through. This is a bit unusual for the DCR 8 station. Usually we include a question about running, which we delve into, and we sometimes have a quick catch-up with a guest, but this week it's all about the live show from Further Faster. Now, if you don't normally catch the DCR 8 station podcast, we'd really love it if you could join us. It comes out in the weeks between DCR, and it's a paid subscriber-only episode. But it's only $8 a month, which is great value.
Yeah, and for that, you get the podcast, you get full access to the newsletter, which includes an essay about running, greatest trail ever recommendations, the DCR book club recommendations, and the Stoke, where we pick out some cool stuff. We're also planning some paid subscriber giveaways, so watch this space. And in the podcast itself, yeah, I think if you do get the chance to go back and have a listen, the questions that we're asking can get quite deep, can't they? And we sort of delve into some sort of really fundamental questions about running and our relationship with running and how to, you know, navigate your way through running.
Definitely. And our relationship with each other.
Yeah.
Our relationship with the wider world and kind of perhaps it's lifting the veil a little bit on who we are as people, who we are as runners and how sure. We engage. But look, if that, you know, if this is not your if the newsletter is not your thing, because you get the essay as well, which kind of, you know, leads you down that garden path, and you're keen on this podcast, you can get into the DCR 8 station podcast itself via Apple, Spotify, and the usual podcast platforms. It's a separate feed to Dirt Church Radio, and you'll find it by searching DCR 8 station. And we always put the regular DCR eps in there too. So if you signed up for the 8 station podcast, you could just have that as your source of DCR as well. And by the way, you get the good oil, you get us every week instead of every fortnight, and you get to help keep the lights on at DCR, which we really, really appreciate.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, while we're talking about housekeeping things, we recorded the live show on video, and we've put that on our YouTube channel. Yes, we have a YouTube channel. We'll include a link in our show notes, but if you get the newsletter, of course, you already know that. Did you know that we had a YouTube channel? Because, you know, we've just started on it, so go and check that out and have a look. You can also listen to the podcast, actually, through YouTube. So you should be able to do that. Look, if you also, we've included the live show on that YouTube channel, but there was some outtakes at the end. There was a Q&A, and we thought we'd stopped recording, but the camera was still recording, so it actually captured the Q&A, and so we thought, why not clip that out, and we'll chuck that for the paid subscribers only. So if you're a paid subscriber, you can go and check that out as well in the newsletter. You can watch that video of the Q&As where we've got asked things like worst episode ever, and other curly questions that you can see us going, not sure how to answer
Bloody
this.
Bloody Holly.
Up with some answers, yeah. Right, Skedaddle. So, Matt, how was it? How was your day?
I said to you so there were two things that I was really thankful for on the Skedaddle, and I'll be honest with you, one, it wasn't my essay week. That was my number one thing, because I was thinking how I'm never going to be able to string a sentence together. And the other thing I was thankful for was to be surrounded with such magnificent, magnificent scenery. Oh my goodness. I said to you afterwards, it's like being beaten to death in a Graham Sidney painting. You know, Sir Graham Sidney,
beaten the famous lad. Beaten to death by the legs.
Yes.
Graham Sidney painting.
You get a Graham Sidney painting. It was one of the most challenging things that I've ever done. I think it's definitely the most challenging trail marathon I've done by a country mile. It's certainly challenging than many of the ultras that I've done. God, it was tough.
Well, more than 2,000 metres of climbing in a marathon.
2,100 metres of climbing in a marathon. You know, lots of up and down, very challenging in the sense that there was lots of kind of shaly rock. It was lots of technical sections, lots of routes, lots of, off camber stuff. And then you're heading across farm tracks and it was incredibly varied. You're running through beech forests for some of it. And then you're up into the subalpine for some of it, which was, you know, for a dude who lives at sea level, it didn't feel particularly fun actually. But incredible day, surrounded by incredibly tough people. Like it's just nothing. There's nothing like that up here. And it struck me as an event that I said to you and I said to, you know, Sean, the guy, the bush janitor at the end, look, if you do nothing with this race, you guys will get super famous because it's just that. It's a crucible. And I think it's going to become known as kind of a bit of a litmus test, actually.
So, yeah, go and test your fitness by, you know, struggling your way around that. But yeah, it was kind of a stunning place to have a race. It felt like being in the middle of nowhere. So Island Hills Station, I'm going to get this wrong, I think it's 5,000 hectares, which, you know, Sean Monk, the station manager, was having a chat to us afterwards, and unfortunately I managed to bugger up the recording, sorry Sean. But you know, he was telling us about how a large percentage of it now is in private conservation land. And the race itself raises money towards those conservation efforts. So you really feel like, yeah, you're sort of contributing to that land. And at the prize giving afterwards, he said, you know, it's a special part of the country. And now for everyone who's run it and been here today, it will always be special to you. And it felt like that. It really felt like you were part of something. You were, you know, the little finish line village that set up was super cool and very friendly. And you know, obviously I wasn't running, so I was hanging out around there lots of the day. Great vibe, people really friendly. They had pizzas, wood-fired pizzas going. They had a, you know, brewery including zero alcohol beer, I will say, which was good. And it just had such a great vibe, and it really did feel very welcoming and you know, like a local race, a good local race. Yeah.
And it was incredible the amount of, so we were there, you know, very luckily we got to camp over at, which was really added to the adventure, you know, for me, like really added, because I'm a city boy, I'm a fancy boy, and it's not in my norm to do stuff like that. But watching the volunteers come together, there was a lot of different Landsar and SAR organizations, people from the West Coast, people who came over. There was, you know, people spent the night out at the bush huts. So there's all these people sort of coalesced. And just there to volunteer and to have a good time and to and make this thing happen. And it really was the kind of epitome of a grassroots race. And
100 volunteers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huge operation.
Yeah.
And you know, when I was speaking to Sean, he goes, "Oh, you know, I'm a bit of an overmarker," and I went, "Oh, you know, like so am I," and thank God he was, because my goodness me, you're out in the middle of chuffing nowhere,
yeah.
And you know, I'd still, if it wasn't for his overmarking, I'd still be out there,
yeah.
They would be searching for me,
yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because that Island Hill Station track, he made it, didn't he?
He made it.
Yeah, pretty special. Yep. Pretty special.
Very special.
And also slaying predators, possums, mustelids, hedgehogs, wildcats.
Yep.
So yeah, all in a good cause. So yeah, it was cool. Cool time to hang out there. You know, I caught up with Rocky from Further Faster, who did the 15K, and here's what he had to say.
Rocky, how is that? How good is that beer?
The beer is really good, yes. Thanks to Brew Moon for sponsoring the damn race. Yeah.
Most important. How was it out there?
It was fantastic. A really, really, really good race. More brutal than any 15K I'd ever done, to be honest. Probably due to that vert. 750 metre vert on a 15K, and most of that vert was probably over 4K. A bit of a pull.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's
it was good. It was really good, to be honest, yeah. Beautiful scenery out the back of this station. Absolutely fantastic.
Well, describe it a little bit for people who haven't been here.
What you've got here is your classic rolling hills. But as you get into the tops, you're looking out to proper mountains, to be quite honest, and a few snow-capped peaks. You're out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And if you took a wrong turn, well, you'd be out for weeks, I think, to be honest. Yeah. Cracking course.
Don't do that. Yeah. No. Cracking course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a great crowd for a local community race, really, isn't
considering
it?
Considering this is the second year this event has been held, yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's got such a good following for such a good course. Yeah.
And were you running on your own? Was there always people around you?
I ran most of it on my own, but you group up, especially on the uphill, you group up a little bit. But then when you got to the downhill, you let the afterburners off a little bit, and then you're just doing your own thing. Yeah.
And you had some choices out there of taking the bluff or going the river crossing. Where
river,
did you
mate,
go?
Took the river, and I swear the river is faster than the bluff. If you're doing the 15K next year, take the river.
Oh, that's a good tip.
Yeah, good tip. Yeah. I reckon it gives you at least 20 seconds.
There you go. Every second counts, doesn't it?
Bloody well does, mate. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Hey, well done.
Thank you so much.
And yeah, enjoy the afternoon.
Thank you. Cheers.
All right, the results. So in the 42K, it was Emma Timmis with a new course record, 4:47:45. Thea Taylor, 4:53:18. And Kirsty Gilmore in 5:22:35.
Yeah, and Emma is not far out from doing her 7-day mission, trying to aim for a world record. So this was something different. But she was in great form and had a good chat with her afterwards. Thea, that was... So she'd only run half the distance and a third of the elevation previously.
Whoa. Yeah. Yeah,
and
she's hammering that woman.
4:53 on that course. Pretty amazing. Scotty Hawker, 3:47:17, set a new course record. Aditya Kesakordi Watson of Nelson, 3:58:49. And Tom Treteen, 4:01 for third. Scotty and Aditya both running under 4 hours is amazing. Scotty then went and ran the kids' race as well with his niece. Anyway, it was pretty funny to see him lining up there. The Wildebeest 30K, Sophia Sosa Salas, 3:42:35, and Damien Cranny, 3:03:43.
In the 15K, it was Katie Elsob in 1:33:44 and James Miller in 1:14:40.
In the 10K, it was Sarah McSweeney with 55:15 first overall two, and Adam Whitelock, former Crusader, 56:17.
And in the kids' 4K, it was Georgia Kelso in 24:19 and Jack Savage in 21:40. Fantastic.
If you want to have some entertainment, watch the reel that we made of the Skedaddle Trail Race, because you'll see some of those kids flying down the hill. Oh, to have ligaments and tendons as free moving as those guys and girls did, because they were absolutely hooning down the hills. It was so fun to watch. Yeah, it's crazy.
Speaking of ligaments and tendons and free moving, Dan Jones, shout out to Dan Jones, who picked up silver at the Canyons 50K over the weekend. Bring on Western States.
Hell yeah, that's going to be so good. Right. Usually in the DCR Aid Station podcast, we have a running related question, which, as we said, we ask each other some deep and meaningful questions and then spend 20 minutes or so answering it. What running means to us, dealing with injuries, dealing with DNFs, how to get out of a hole, those sorts of things. But this week, as we said, we're going to bring you our live show from Further Faster. So have a listen to that, and if you want to catch the Q&A afterwards, that's in the newsletter as well. Have a look at that. So enjoy.
Okay, guys, I will kick off. Well, thank you very much for everybody that's turned up this evening. If you don't know me, I'm Rocky, and along with Jules hiding somewhere, we are the owners of this wonderful establishment, Further Faster, which many of you do know. Yeah. And, well, obviously, as you could probably tell, tonight we are being graced with the presence of these two wonderful people. Well, you might know the guys from Dirt Church Radio. I take it everybody knows who Dirt Church are. They don't need an introduction from me, do they?
Go on, I dare you.
Okay.
Get our names right.
Right, do you really want to play this game? Well, I first met Matt many, many years ago at a Kepler after party, the likes of which we'll probably never see again. I think it was 2017, probably Kepler after party, and he introduced himself and he said, oh, I'm a trail runner, I'm blah, blah, blah. And I didn't really know anybody really. I think it was my first Kepler, actually, down there for the first time around. I met Grant and we got talking and he goes, he said who you were and that, and he just carried on. Then he got a job as editor for Trail Magazine.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. And then that lasted for a while. Then you said, I've got another idea. I can't tell you what it is, but it's a really crazy idea for a podcast, and I think it's going to work really well. And sure enough, you could say it's worked really well.
It's worked pretty good. I think we're here.
God, you don't really, you know.
It's only taken 6 years.
Bit of back and forth. Anyhow, without further ado, because you're not here to see me, I'll leave you with the boys.
Eugene
and Matt from Dirt Church Radio.
Thank you. Kei ake nui kei aku rahi e te tī e te tā, tēnā koutou. He mihi nui ki ngā mana whenua o te rohi nei. Tēnā koutou. I tēnei rā, i te wā katoa, ka maumahara tonu tātou ki a rātou. We will remember them.
Well, good evening, everyone. Kia ora, welcome to the Dirt Church Radio Further Faster live show. I'm Matt Raymond, as Rocky kindly said.
And I'm Eugene Bingham. Tēnā koutou. We made it! Finally!
Yeah, it's been 6 years. Thank you for everyone coming along. And tonight, all the tickets, all the money from the tickets goes to the Mandamus Preservation Reserve and their conservation work. And that's how you say that, eh? Mandamus.
Very close.
Very close. How do you say the name of the street, Matt?
It's Buchan Street.
For six,
oh, so all of you knew. All of you knew.
6 years. And no
6 years.
I've been telling six. You 6 years of it wrong.
You haven't been telling us for 6 years. You've just been letting us say it wrong for 6 years. Aucklanders. You won't tell us, though. 6 years. They told me in the car on the way over. I feel so deeply embarrassed about this.
Anyway, it's so good to be here. And I reckon we should just crack into it. We've got a couple of great yarns, a couple of great guests to come up and join us. Jess Campbell, born and bred in Canada, but has called New Zealand home for years now, and has worn the silver fern with pride at the World Champs for trail and mountain running.
Yep, and we've also got Michael Mitchell, who loves a great adventure, loves a good story, and has lined up at the Revenant, so clearly a character. But first, you know, I'll say it once, I'll say it twice. How good is it to be here at Further Faster, home of Jules, Rocky, Badger, and this little piece of fried gold?
It goes something like Further Faster there in Christchurch.
So that gem made its way into the world, into our consciousness on February 20th, 2020, courtesy of our mate Andrew McDowell, who did it off his own bat, actually, just made it up, sent it to us, as Andrew tends to do. But it was drawn from one of your Rift ads, wasn't it?
Yeah, I just made it up on the spot, clearly, because it's terrible, and he made it.
Put some music to it.
Yeah, it's really got legs.
It has got legs, yeah. It's sort of hung around. It's got resonance, and we heard that Rocky started to get annoyed because people were coming into the shop singing it all the time, and, you know, he'd have people standing here sort of screaming it at him, so, you know, don't stop that. And then, you know, we seized upon it and started encouraging people to do that, really, didn't we?
Yeah, in fact, I think we might have offered a discount at one point if you go into the shop and yell it at Rocky's. But didn't people... Yeah, you did get it a lot on races.
Yeah. So Rocky ever...
Yeah, people thought he was Badger. So
just to clarify... Is he? I don't know.
No, I met Badger today.
Oh, right, yeah. He's a good boy, right. Rocky's not a good boy?
No, Rocky's a good boy.
Rocky's a good boy too. Okay, all right. So it got to the point where Rocky made several polite inquiries and then several not polite inquiries for us to find a new jingle But since we didn't find the first one in the first place, we don't feel any obligation to do that. So we haven't. But, you know, it's just become stubborn. And so it's stuck around for 6 years. And, you know, he made the mistake of having a go at us before the Kepler 2020, didn't he?
He did. He made the mistake of having a go at us at 2020. He was like, look, can you actually change it? Like something maybe more heavy metal or something like that. Just anything, please stop getting people to sing it at us. Please, please, please. And said, so roger that, Rocky, we will. And Kepler that year was one of the... Anyone do Kepler in 2020? Yeah, it was one of the alternate courses. Oh, so the rain thing, the glacial water thing, that was good. You run up to Mount Luxmore, and then you run back down, and then out to the control gates, out past the control gates to Motoro and back. And so we were doing the Kepler, Rocky was doing the Luxmore grunt, and I was running back down the hill, and who should come up the trail but Rocky, and I thought it'd be extremely funny to scream the theme song into his face as loud as I could as I ran past. And I'd been thinking about this for a while, you know, I thought it was going to come off really well. It didn't.
Part of the race plan.
Part of the race plan, yeah. And so we passed each other and I duly screamed it in his face, you know, and like, ah ha ha, and he just looked at me like, dick.
Pulled his poles out.
Yeah, yeah, took a swipe at me with the pole. And I was running with a guy and we tucked in together and came off the thing and we got probably a kilometre down the trail, and he sort of turned his head back and goes, oh, that's so funny what happened before. You know, advertising really works. Not realizing that, obviously.
You were responsible.
Yeah, it was my poor idea in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, look, we should get our first guest up. So, you know, we'd like to welcome Jess. She's all the way from, as we said, from Canada. Come on up. Living here. Actually, I'll move across. Trip you up, injure you, good one. Yeah. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Should we ask some rapid fire questions, sort of settle the nerves, or does it make it just
that's probably making me more nervous.
More awkward? Yeah. Okay, cool. We'll dive straight into the like really emotional stuff. Look, you've been more used to being on the other side of the tape. And I understand recently that you had the opposite experience crewing for your husband, Aaron, at the Fault Line Milo. What was that experience like?
Oh, it was really cool. It was, interesting to see from start to finish and get to see, obviously, my husband complete it, but all the different athletes and watch their ups and downs and help support them through that. And to watch him battle through his highs and lows and push through and persevere was pretty cool.
Did you ever find it like super annoying?
No.
Like, God, is this what I'm like? Is this what it's like? Is this what it's like crewing?
Fortunately, he was actually a really good person to crew with and didn't really get grumpy with me.
And did you manage to control the FOMO or did it peak out at times?
No, for this race, I managed to control it. I wasn't ready to race for that weekend at all. So it was just good to hang out with rad people in the community. Yeah.
Ups and downs. There were a lot of ups and downs in that race, wasn't there?
Apparently. I got to drive through most of them, so it was all right.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So you raced at Ultra Trail Cape Town.
Yes.
Which is a race that seems quite intriguing. What was it like? Tell us about it.
Oh, it was epic. I'd love to go back and do it when I'm not injured. Just the vibe. It was my first international race. It was my first go at 100Ks. It was epic. A mean course, like really hard. The heat, the climbing, but it was awesome.
Is it, so when you say the heat, is it just insanely hot or?
In the middle of the day, which happens to be the hardest section of the course, it just is beaming down on you, high humidity. It got pretty hot.
So you'd like to go back?
I would love to go back, yeah.
What about Everest Base Camp?
Yeah, so that was cool. That was on a volunteer mission with a company, an organization called HER International, which is a Canadian-Nepalese joint thing. And so went over for a month, and the first 2 weeks we got to hike up to Everest Base Camp, which was pretty cool. Got my first dose of altitude sickness. Just the experience, the people in Nepal are amazing. Once again, I'd love to go back.
What is the experience of altitude sickness like? I mean, I've kind of read about it and seen stuff about it, but you're in the flesh here. You can tell us. What's it like?
Yeah, unfortunately, I've had it a few times. Just mild. Like, I've never had anything major, but just couldn't eat anything. Real drowsy. Yeah, if I tried to eat it, just right through you. but it disappears as soon as you drop down.
When we've climbed to like 150 meters in the Riverhead Forest, Matt, sometimes I get real giddy.
Yeah, you do get giddy. And I must say that was a masterful easing, Jessen, and calming your nerves. So tell us about what the NGO is doing. I mean, there's going to base camp, but there's going to base camp for a reason.
Yeah, so they work with indentured girls who, it's now illegal, but when they first started, they were girls that basically got sold to people for work, and their families would sell them because they needed the money. And so this NGO would buy these girls back so that they could then be with their families and put them through an education and teach them. And then they've also got a women's group. So they actually, they have encouraged women to get together and harness their own skills and create their own little businesses so they can actually support themselves without relying on their husbands.
Wow. Yeah, indentured. Cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the word.
Yeah, no, that is the word. So literally being bought as
property. Yeah, basically. Wow. So it was 12 years ago. Actually, I just had a memory pop up today. 12 years ago I went. And I think even then, by then it was illegal to sell, but it was still happening. Yeah.
Yeah, that is pretty shit. Like someone in the audience said. I mean, how do you as a Westerner with a sort of problem, like what was the reception like? What was it?
I unfortunately, so our trip, we did the Everest Base Camp, and then we were meant to go out into this, the community, which was meant to be like an 8-hour bus ride from Kathmandu. But unfortunately, the bus company went on strike the day we were meant to take the bus. So we ended up just volunteering in Kathmandu at their office. So I never actually got to meet these girls or the women, but I've read their stories and have followed along with the organization over the years, and it's pretty powerful.
One of the things, I mean, pivoting, but we spoke to someone who said that, you know, you had inspired them here as well, because one of the things you like doing is running and hiking with your dogs, you know, going up into the hills, spending the night. And we spoke to a woman who said, you know, that you were you inspired her to take that first step. What is it about going out into the bush with a couple of dogs that's so special?
Oh, I just think going out to the bush is special. I just love being in nature. My dogs love it too, so it just makes it, yeah, even more fun. Sometimes I bring my husband along.
Carry the dog food.
Well, they've got packs now, rougher packs, yeah.
So that's a good segue. You work for the Department of Conservation. What's your job?
So currently I'm an asset inspector, so I get to go out and check out the huts and the tracks and the bridges and make sure they're not going to fall apart.
That's a pretty cool job.
It's all right.
How long will you be out on the wilderness checking those things? Like, do you go out for multi-day missions?
Yeah, I tend to push the days into big days. So my biggest days have been like a three-day mission. But some of the other inspectors around the country will go out for 5-day missions if they're going way into the backcountry.
And is that like sneaky training as well?
Sometimes.
I better go check that hut way over there.
I'm just going to do some runs up and down here just to
double
make
check,
sure.
Yeah, make yeah. sure, yeah.
This is quite a departure from your former job. I mean, you were an aircraft engineer.
In a previous life,
yeah,
yes.
How did you get into that?
Into aircraft engineering? Yeah, it was random through school. Well, it's like a career day and got to go and check out this place. And I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. And then did an internship one summer before my final year at high school and just... yeah, really enjoyed it, and they hired me out of high school and put me through my apprenticeship.
How long did you do that for?
About 6 or 7 years. Yeah.
My father did his apprenticeship for aircraft engineer with Teal down in Christchurch,
right.
In the 60s.
So yeah, right.
I was like, aircraft engineering? And that's about the sum total of my knowledge of aircraft engineering, that you did it and my father did it.
Nice.
There you go.
Yes, Chris is, yes.
There we go. All right, well, the three people...
Do you guys all know each other? Like,
do you guys know Keith Raymond?
Matt's dad, Chris. So we're lucky enough to have a Crater Rim Ultra entry to give away tonight, which we're going to do at the end, so don't leave. If you're tempted to leave, just hang around for the Crater Rim Ultra entry.
It's worth it.
Well, you tell us about it. I mean, not that you've spent a long time racing that, because you seem to hoon around the course a bit too quick for us, but what's it like?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It sort of showcases the Port Hills around here. So I've done the 53K course a couple times, and then this last year put my hand in for the 80K course. But yeah, the trails are pretty nice. You get to see all of the, well, the Crater Rim, the Port Hills. Yeah, it showcases some good Christchurch running.
Hands up, who's done Crater Rim? Yeah, like the whole audience, just about. Yeah, half the audience. Yeah, it's, I mean, it is an amazing course, isn't it? It's beautiful, and it's obviously been New Zealand champs course as well. So, you know,
yeah,
fast.
I don't know about fast. but that was the initial draw, was it being the champs. And then, yeah, I've just kept coming back, and it's worth it.
It, speaking of worth it, you've, you know, raced for New Zealand. What was it like to, you know, pull the silver fern on and wear that?
Yeah, it's a cool feeling representing my second country. yeah, it's a whole different experience. Just racing overseas was a whole eye-opening experience. And then being able to wear the silver fern was just added.
What happens in the team environment? Are you all like sharp elbows at each other, or do you sort of help each other as fellow Kiwis racing together?
Oh, as fellow Kiwis, we help each other. I mean, the first year I went, I was the only female running in the short trail, so there was no competition there. And even last year, the spread of skills amongst our team was, yeah, we weren't really competing against each other. We were just running our own races and helping each other out where we could.
It, yeah. Was there any divided loyalties there with Canada?
No. I only started trail running in 2018, I think it was, probably. So I was, yeah, most of my trail, all my trail running's been in New Zealand. And
so we can well given. And
truly. Yeah.
There's no kind of desire to try to be a dual national?
Oh, I am.
No, a dual.
Maybe. Yeah, we'll see.
Pretty cool. So when you caught up, we caught up before because, you know, introducing and chatting and said, and you have done some pretty cool stuff, objectively, right? Like, objectively, you've done some pretty cool stuff. But you said that one of the biggest challenges you have is overcoming your own self-doubt.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I've cracked it, but...
That's good. That's
right,
good.
Guys? That's clearly a lie. But for everyone else, do you have any... you know, we all feel doubt. We all feel those kind of... those little voices, those body feelings, those thoughts. Any strategies that you use? Anything that kind of that gets you on the right track when things start to get a bit hectic?
Surrounding myself with a good team, really, the support of like my husband, my coach, friends, family, is my biggest ally, really. Yeah, they're the ones that pick me up.
And I mean, if I may ask, you know, you've said you're injured. How's that going?
Did I say I was injured?
Did you say you were injured? You did say
that was me.
Oh. I am struggling with a few niggles, but I think it's just part of the course. I've got a great physio helping me out, so yeah.
Well, look, thank you very much.
I was just going to say shout out to the physios.
Yes. Inspire Motion.
Well, look, thank you very much for jumping up, and please everyone give Jess a warm round of applause.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So look, Matt, while Jess was talking, I was reflecting on the fact that, you know, Jess has run some races quite well. We've entered some races, maybe not quite so well. You know,
the guts and the glory, more the guts. Jess has done really well. We've entered races.
Yeah. Smooth segues coming at you for 6 years. Yeah. But look, we've actually had the privilege too, in calling some races, of being on the finish lines, I should say, and the start lines, for some incredible performances, haven't we? And I was thinking, you know, probably one of the most dramatic was your experience of calling in Caddy Wright.
Yeah, Caddy Wright at the Tutuwedda. It was 2021, let's say, at the 100-mile race. And 100-mile racing in Aotearoa has been, it's a long distance, obviously, and the time differences are generally a little bit, you know, they blow out to sort of 10, 20 minutes, sometimes over an hour. You can see some absolute hammerings. When we had word, and it was in the middle of the night, that, or early hours of the morning, that Fiona Hayvice and Caddy Wright had left the aid station at Redwoods absolutely at the same time. In fact, they were throwing elbows. The crew were kind of jostling for food at the 7K mark, and they were out the gate together. It looked, and we saw video, it looked like a fight in a nightclub because all the disco lights were going and everything, and it was truly one of the most hectic experiences that we've seen. Anyone met Katie Wright? Show of hands. Yeah. Anyone care to comment on Katie Wright's level of composure and sort of comportment most times? Yeah, very chilled, very cool, very calm, polite, lovely. Yeah, absolutely. She came over the finish line like a pile of hot trash. She fell over the finish line. She threw her poles in the air, like wheeled her pole over the thing. She was rolling around on the ground, screaming and crying. Just so, I've never seen anyone kind of spend it or send it that hard. Almost in complete shock that she'd done this, you know, that she, and this is the woman who, you know, she was the first person to win a backyard in Aotearoa, first woman in the world to win a backyard. She was one of the final four at Biggs. She's done some pretty incredible things. She ran around Wales just because she wanted to, and sent that in as the greatest run ever, no pressure. She totally like rolling around, and there's a photo of me and her. And someone said at the time it was just, in that context, it was just two healthcare professionals not adhering to personal space boundaries with the COVID, because we were, you know, looking, trying to stick a mic in her face, and she was all over the place. Fiona Hayvice arrives, I think it was 90 seconds later. Yeah, 90 seconds she comes barreling over. Looking, anyone met Fiona Hayvice? Yeah. Again, cool, calm, collected. Yeah? Fiona Hayvice comes over. Cool, calm, collected. She's just like, well done. So yeah, we've seen some epic.
Yeah, I missed that finish because I was out the back of the course that year, pacing some dear friends, Gene, who's in the audience here, Say One and Smudge, which was a brilliant experience, a different experience. But you know, we were out there quite a while, and we were glad to see you call us in on Sunday afternoon, which was good.
Yeah, that was incredible too. Seeing you come over the line, and you know,
who's paced for anyone? Yeah, well, you have, Jane, because you paced me. Yeah, yeah. It's cool, isn't it? It's a different experience. I'd encourage anyone to give it a go. Because you have to be ready for it. You have to be prepared and obviously fit enough to try and keep up anyway. It's a whole different way of getting out on the trails and experience it. So I'd encourage anyone to give it a go if you get a chance.
Anyone planning to pace anyone this year? Anyone got any grand plans?
Matt's looking for a pacer.
No, I've got one. I've got one. Thanks.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. Because
your other one bailed on
you.
Yeah,
he bailed.
Yeah, I was supposed to be pacing Matt, and I've had to pull out. So you know. Anyway.
Got something else on or something.
Yeah. But yeah. So we do get to be in. You know, seeing some pretty remarkable things in races, don't we? Some incredible things. I was thinking about that time at the finish line at Kosciuszko. So it was deep. We'd been awake for a long, long time. We were quite, you know, the final runners were coming in. And a woman kind of came up to us and we were a little bit distracted. And she said, do you mind if I just go and stand over there? I just want to welcome my friend in. They're about to cross the finish line. And we were sort of like, oh, yeah, sure. We had absolutely no authority to do this, but we were just like, yeah, no worries. Yeah, sure, yeah.
Fine. This woman had been hanging out on the... So how cozy is, you got your arch, and then we're here, and then there's quite a shallow space, and there's the back bollards. The corral's quite small, and there's been this woman there. She'd been there for a couple of hours, and she had what I thought was like a rolled-up magazine or maybe a rainbow flag or something like that. And I was like, that's really cool. She's obviously waiting to see a friend and you know, like, this is going to be so cool. And she comes up, and but it wasn't a rainbow flag or a rod of anything. What was it?
No, well, she sort of, we didn't even notice. And she tucked herself in behind the gantry of the finish line, sort of really, well, like hiding really, stealth mode.
Have you guys ever seen those gender reveal videos? And invariably the dude will stand there like this and then like, fire the glitter cannon into his own balls. Have you seen that? You've seen that? You guys have seen those videos, right? He's like, yay, it's a girl! Bam! And then floor. She had a glitter cannon. She had a glitter cannon. So we're like 31, 32 hours into a 100-mile race, and we see... So the way... Anyone been to Thredbo? Cozzy, what you do is you see the runners come down the final ski hill, so you can see them for mile. You know, see them. They come up through the bush, and it's about a mile, and then they come back down the hill. And we're cheering.
She was ready.
Cheryl from Katoomba, your day has been a challenging day. You know, and this woman's tucked in behind there.
Poor Cheryl from Katoomba crosses the finish line, bang, like point blank, point blank. She drops to the ground.
Yeah, she fell. Like she fired it into her friend's face. Like the glitter didn't go like, yeah, they go like that, you know, like the projectile hit the woman in the face. Not a speck of, you know, and you know what glitter's like, right? Glitter is the leprosy of crafts. It just gets everywhere, and once glitter, but not a speck of glitter hit the floor or anything. The woman's face and body.
She was quite sweaty, so it was going to stick as well. But she's lying on the floor and she's not moving. We start looking at each other going, holy
we
shit.
We are fully dressed in UTMB stuff.
We've been like, we've just been party to a homicide. Like, we're going to be arrested as co-conspirators in a homicide. Great.
Yeah, it was. Where were we going to end the story? It's just living trauma. Yeah.
So we ran from the cops.
And now we can't go back to Australia.
And now we can't get back to Australia. Yeah. No. It turned out she got up and we were sort of like filled with a bit of trepidation. She started laughing, thankfully. So she took the joke pretty well, didn't she? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty well. She's probably still getting.
No, she took it pretty. She took it pretty well. Yeah, ears. She lost a tooth, but
and the eye. I mean, the eye's going to be okay.
Yeah, the eye will be fine. But that was clearly one. That was one of the. That was a good story.
It was. And the thing about it that was that I was in full panic mode because after 6 years of dirt shoot, she probably may have picked up that. In the relationship, I'm Captain Cautious.
And it says here that I'm the Outrage King. Which, upon reviewing the script, Outrage is doing a lot of work. I'm not Alex Jones or Winston Peters or anyone like that. Like, I'm not out there.
Yeah, but on one of our very first interviews with Mal Aiken, who's like, you know, New Zealand royalty, you managed to slag off the West Coast, the entire West Coast. And then in a later episode, you managed to slag off the entire region of Manawatu, which you can hear, if you listen to those interviews, you can hear me gasping, like, what are you doing?
I do love the chaos, and I think if we substitute Outrage King for Impulsivity Gremlin or something like that, like, there's a little part of my brain, and ask my family, there's a little part of my brain, like, don't say it, and there's parts that go, say it. It'll be fine. Just say it. Nothing will happen. It'll be fine. No one listens. It'll be fine. And so, yeah, I love the cast. But two things I'd like to rebut that is one that I had my first Holy Communion at St. Mary's Catholic Parish in Roslyn, Palmerston North. So that makes me pretty much a local. And secondly, Eugene, and you guys actually don't know the things that I've done or seen, actually, as a proud Aucklander. You know, I've taken the Auckland flag into some pretty dark places. I headlined a midday university orientation show at Lincoln University Lincoln University, there you go. Yeah, I believe you called me a derogatory name or someone who looked like you. So, in my arty sort of au fait Auckland punk band, and we all came away for some scars, many of them invisible. So ever since then, I've been trying to settle the score.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah. Auckland's got some pretty neat stuff.
Yeah, it's got some good food, some beautiful trails, some great traffic.
Huge gene pool. Like, really good if you want to go out there, guys, honestly. But in my defence, there's some lines that even I won't cross. Like, this April Fool's, when that whole thing about how Dirt Church Radio bought the Trail Running New Zealand Substack. Did anyone see that? That people got really angry about that, eh? Like, oh, corporate. It's corporate. The corporate people, they're coming for our trail running Substack. Yeah, no, it got real bad. It got real bad. And I thought it'd be really funny to get the to mispronounce Shawman Kaitoki on purpose, like write that down. Like, I thought that would be really funny, like get the SK name wrong, but then realise that I would have been like, someone would have FKT'd their way up from Wellington and murdered me with a titanium
when you say
camping
I realised, I checked the receipts on that, went back through our receipts, and I actually said to you, I think that's a bridge too far.
Well, when I say I, because I consider us the same person, and you are the frontal lobe in our relationship. So, yeah, I realised. I said, hey, look, it'll be fine. But
yeah. Look, it's, you know, we kind of, that's how we kind of roll, and it's very different to how we thought it might be when we started out 6 years ago. When we sort of embarked on this, we didn't really know where we'd go. We sort of thought, hey, our friends and family might listen, and that'd be nice. They don't listen, by the way. You know, some of our family are here under sufferance tonight.
But, some of our friends are here. One of our friends is here. Doesn't listen, do you? Doesn't. You don't, do you? Yeah. We're up to 200. If you can name how much we're up to, if you can name, I'll give you a credit room entry.
This is not making good radio material. Anyway.
Nah. Not even close.
Is this where we should reveal that there is a hidden episode?
Yeah.
There is a hidden episode, because we did a pilot episode, and it's the same person who hasn't listened to the podcast was in the pilot episode, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he hasn't listened.
Maybe, because he was
It wasn't about you, it was about us, you know, it was all kind of like, we recorded it, we sat around, there was three of us sitting in a echoey room with a podcast mic plugged into a laptop sitting in the middle of a table. It was truly awful.
It was horrible. Yeah, we'll never see that. I mean, it was good. It was, you know.
Good talent.
Yeah.
Good talent.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But
great painting, bad frame. Right, yeah.
Right, but we managed to somehow recover ourselves, we think, and we've carried on for 6 years. But we should get another guest up here.
We should get another guest on.
Yeah. Michael Mitchell, come on up.
Oh, come on, you can do better than that.
Up the wires. Kia ora, fellas.
I nearly got there. Kia ora. Kia ora. So, look, you've done something very few people can say that they've done. You survived that thing. What's more, you're still standing here to talk about it. Brave, courageous, steadfast. You recently called Tiano the best town in New Zealand. How did that go down in your hometown of Invercargill?
And they say that I'm the outrage king, right?
Well, it's funny. It's just, it wasn't an imposition to me. It's just pure fact.
Fact?
Yeah.
How, like I say, how did it go down in your hometown of Invercargill?
Well, I've got a wires crossed. I'm from Tiano.
You're from Tiano?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
true story.
Yeah, no, that's okay. It's okay. But I was living in Invercargill recently. Yep. But now I call Christchurch home.
How did it get in Christchurch?
It didn't make the paper. No. But yeah.
Anyway, look, you wrote about that. That was that revelation, which, you know, obviously we checked our facts and got it wrong. But anyway, sorry.
Yes, I see now.
Apologise. Yeah. In a piece for the Further Faster website about the WTF 6, mm-hmm. which is not what it sounds like it is.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain a little bit about that race? It sounds like a pretty cool race.
Yeah, it's run by a group of our mates from Tiano. WTF, of course, stands for Wilderness Traverse Fiordland, run by a group called the Fair Society.
Not what you thought it was.
Yeah.
What did you think it was?
I'm part of a crew with Holly over here and Barrett over there and our other friend Harvey. And it's an adventure race. It's an adventure event.
Adventure event.
A shared event. Yeah, that's right. Just like me and Harvey, we had a pack raft.
We're racing, obviously.
That's like about a that's like a millimetre away from you saying it's a journey.
Well, there's conjecture over national parks and...
Right. Yeah. And no, it wasn't a race. Yeah. It wasn't a race.
No,
it was just
no,
a group of friends getting together. Yep.
Yeah. Adventure.
Just happened to be having watches on, looking at them all the time, going hard.
Yeah. Tracking purely for safety purposes.
Of course.
Of course. Yeah. So we just went out there with our compass and our pack raft for a couple of days, traversing around Fiordland. And, yeah, it's really good fun. It's just it's not that many people do those events, and so we sort of get to know everyone, and it's good fun. Yeah,
I must say, having read that piece, that you had me at one of your crewmates cooking you hash browns.
Oh yeah,
like that's quality.
Well, even better than
need some crewmates, Matt. We need some crewmates who cook hash browns.
We need to race longer than half marathons then.
Oh, true. Do we though? Do we though?
Yeah, true.
Oh, you give them a couple of six times, mate.
Yeah. Oh, no, fine. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah.
But, you know, you adventure racers love your food.
Yeah, well, the other cool thing about that is it wasn't actually our support crew. It was, Well, they don't know that our rivals, but our rival team, the Sardines, their support crew gave us hash browns. That's the kind of community adventure racing is, you know, helping out everybody. Yeah.
And then trash talking them on podcasts after.
Oh, yeah. We got them.
You can edit that out in post.
Yeah.
Your rivals in this race that you didn't have.
No, well, what's a race?
What's a race?
Yeah. Never heard of it.
What even is a race? Hey, look, it says here, like, why, Michael? I've never done an adventure race like that. I've never done an adventure race. What is it?
It can mean lots of different things, but typically it's a team of four people with at least one person that's not a male. And you pack raft and kayak, like paddle, trek, and mountain bike. And you do it all together, and the clock doesn't stop. And you navigate the whole way, no GPS, pretty much. A short race would be 3 hours. A long race might be 7 or 8 days. Like, it's a really long race. Yeah, I haven't done one of those. Yeah.
So you grew up in Tiano.
What's the Invercargill thing then? Where did I read that?
I was living there. Yeah. So I was working. I was living in Invercargill because it's a great city, and also
the town of water and light.
Yeah, it's water and light, and opportunities, future, Tim Shadbolt. Yeah, wide streets, wider than they are long. And
a lot of deer fences, no deer, and it looks great from a helicopter going in. I can, the architecture is fantastic.
It's true, yes, yes. Got the reference. I was there working for Department of Conservation because the Kakapo team is based there, and I was working in that crew, and the Kakapo live on islands close to Invercargill, so.
We'd just like to clarify, it wasn't like a prerequisite that you work for Doc to be a guest on this particular show.
But it helps.
But it helps.
Any other Doc workers in the house?
Yeah, we do actually. Sarah Jane, got it.
Oh, okay.
I sit next to her.
Have you done anything? Would you like to come on the podcast? Even for 5 minutes? Yeah. All right.
What do you want, Further Faster and the Department of Conservation?
Yeah. It's all taxpayer dollars, guys.
Look, you're heading off to Expedition Oregon later in the race. For an actual race.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's in adventure racing terms is an expedition race. So it's sort of 3, 4, 5 days. We'll be going with the same crew, these guys, Holly and Barrett and Harvey. And there's quite, and the way things have worked out, it's really cool. There's about 4 or 5 Kiwi teams going over, and it's just, I think, The draw of adventure racing is you get to go to exciting places, and if you get to go overseas, even better. So that's in September, and we're just ticking away over winter, working towards that, and we've been, as a team, been working on a few little bits and pieces for a year or two, and yeah, we're starting to see some improvements, so it's fun, yeah.
How important is it, or do you even get to train together for an expedition like that? Because that's, I imagine, quite a big part of being able to pull off a successful adventure race, is the dynamic between the team.
It's probably the biggest thing, I would say. So I moved to Christchurch to live about 3 houses down from Holly, for that reason. I'd say time together and understanding each other probably is the key component of a good functioning team. Of course, you need to be able to do the fitness side of things, but with people in their 30s, we have our own lives, and so there's lots of time goes into scheduling weekends and making events, so after this podcast, me and Barrett are going to drive up to Nelson and go for a tramp. So, like little things like that, you got to just got to make the most of the chances that you got, and you got to have extremely understanding partners and families. Yeah, shout out Connor.
I think you just gave us the hurry along. Can you guys speed it up? Because I need to go for a tramp.
Oh no, no. Actually, we're in the middle of an adventure journey. At the
This is stage one.
Speaking about adventures, I mean, you did a Bob Graham round while you lived in the UK. How was that?
I didn't know life could be that fun, it was an amazing day. I was with the team at the time. We were over there for adventure racing, and then there's this thing, had this worldwide pandemic, it was called COVID, I don't know if you remember.
No.
It was quite, affected lots of people. That stopped races. Turns out that it weren't as important as. So we were there to do races in Europe, and they got cancelled. So we thought, what can we do instead? And we did the Bob Graham round. For those that may or may not know what it is, it's like 100 km, quite a lot of vert, and if you've got to try and do it under 24 hours,
42 peaks.
Yeah. Yep.
And Bob Graham did it first.
Yeah, and he didn't even sit down to eat his sandwiches. like he was, he did it, I think, in 1920, and no one believed him for like 15 years, so he had to do it again to prove that he did it. Yeah, and he didn't have Gore-Tex and running shoes and stuff, so.
GPS.
Yeah, no, we did. So yeah, it was a great day. With some awesome mates. I was saying before with Matt, who you guys know, and we didn't think we could do it, but then somehow we did it. And it was just like, we were ecstatic. It was an amazing day, and yeah.
And that was, you were telling us earlier, that it was sort of people sort of coming in behind you and helping out, and even those who'd set out and they weren't going to be able to make it that day, they didn't just go home. They kind of made sure that you get the job done.
Yeah, they did. Eh? It was really that, the cliches of taking a village and all that kind of stuff. Sort of this split into five legs, and then coming into the start of the third leg, we were about half an hour behind the schedule because there was the heat of the day, and we were pretty much, Matt and I looked at each other and we're like, nah, we're done for. There's not a chance. And then we came into the transition, the crew had a bit of music going, had a couple of sausages on the barbie, and we're like, we can't let these guys down. We gotta dig as deep as we can, and then we just slowly started clawing it back. And then we didn't know what we're doing. Like, people typically know the route really well because they're from that part of the UK, whatever. We didn't have time. We were just basically following a GPX file on our watches. But morons, basically. Like, it's not how you're supposed to do the Bob Graham round. And then we just were really lucky and bumped into a couple of guys that were really experienced, a gentleman called Paul Tierney, who's, I didn't know at the time, but is all about that, foul running and stuff. And we jumped in behind them and they pulled us along, and then all of a sudden it was like, whoa, we've got a chance here. And yeah, so it's not a race. It's just one of those personal things. And yeah, just, I get shivers thinking about it. It was a cool day, you know, amazing. Just with your mates out there. Yeah, after we'd had so much disappointment for things that had been cancelled through COVID, and then we had that day, and it was
amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and something that, you know, many people have had a crack at it and failed, so, you know, to do it on your first attempt.
Yeah, well, we did it. We did a recce over 2 days prior. And there was a moment in the recce where it was got to like 11 o'clock at night and it was cold and it was just Matt and I, and we were like, this sucks. I want to go home. I'm freezing.
Who's been there?
I'm tired.
We've been there, right?
Yeah. And then this like strange kind of, I don't want to get a woo-woo, but like a voice was like,
get woo-woo.
Come on. It's like, mate, it doesn't matter. You've been here before. You can do this. Like, just stop thinking about the emotional side of it. Just like focus on getting to the next thing. And all of, like, I could feel this calm come over me, and then I just got on with it and it was fine, and I stopped thinking about it so much, and that's like, that particular moment got me through Bob Graham and has got me through lots of other things since then. So yeah.
You've had a crack at Revenant a couple of times.
Had a crack, yeah.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Is there some unresolved thing you want to share? I mean, we could get it out now.
Yeah.
Not to get too woo-woo or anything, but we could resolve this itch that you can't scratch.
Yeah, no, like my self-doubt, I got that stuff, mate. You know?
Ask Jeff.
Yeah, it's a fun event, and it was just up the road, and lots of good sorts. We've got Brian and Tony in here. They've done it, had a crack at it. I've spent too much time walking around that paddock now, so I probably won't be doing it anytime soon, but it's a lot of fun, and it's beautiful. And I guess I was interested to give the Revenant a crack because come from that sort of background of being a tramper, a stoat trapper, that kind of stuff, adventure racing. I felt like the Revenant was kind of a hybrid of a running / tramping type event, and I was interested to see how the crossover worked, and if you applied those adventure racing skills, could you succeed? I wasn't able to prove it, but my mates Finn and Daz were, so that was quite cool to see them do it. It's a fun event. Scott's created a cool thing. Don't know what else to say. It's good times.
18 years old.
Finn, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Freak.
Is he okay?
Yeah, just a good Southland lad.
Because when you said paddock, I was like, oh, that looks easy. So it's easy. But I understand the North Island, South Island paddocks
Yeah.
Different.
These, well, there's several paddocks.
Ah. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
But it's not a big area. You just go up and down and around and around. And but
I've got about one paddock in me.
You got more than that, mate. Yeah.
Can we talk about
the war?
We could talk about. Well,
yeah. Thanks, by the way, for acknowledging the soldiers at the start of the podcast, Eugene. Cheers.
I was going to say, if it was a war, it was between you and a shark, and you lost.
Loser.
How are you?
Yeah, yeah. You want me to tell the yarn?
Could go you? On, tell it. Yeah. Yeah.
Has anyone heard it? Do they show of hands? Who's anyone sick of it? You can.
Oh, no.
Sweet, let's go.
Yeah, yeah. I know you are. You put your hand up. Yeah.
The shark's forgotten.
Yeah. So shark attack is hyperbole.
Is it though? Because I've seen the photos. Like, yeah. What would you say? Shark encounter?
Yeah, shark nibble. It was so. I was doing some conservation work in the Pacific on a small, beautiful island with amazing locals. The island is called Palmerston. Not to get back. We don't need to get back into the Manawatu.
Well, I mean, what was named after what? I would say that Palmerston.
You be the judge.
In the South Island, named after the tropical island, and Palmerston North.
Could be all simultaneously.
We're getting away from the main point of the story.
Okay, I'm a completionist.
Yeah.
Anyway,
sure. So we were there doing an eradication of rats taking over the island. And we were there for about 3 months. Well, we were supposed to be there for 3 months. The rest of the crew were. And about 6 or 7 weeks in, we went swimming. There's one particularly good swimming spot on the island, which is also the place where sometimes sharks hang out. But no one has been bitten by a shark on that island for 106... No, four people, have been bitten. I was the fourth. But over 160 years, like, that's... You take your odds, you know.
Yeah.
You go all over there. You know, we had great health and safety procedures in place, of course.
Don't
of
go
course.
In the water.
Yeah.
They're the good one, right? That's a good health and safety precaution. Avoid getting...
And I was just getting in the water. Just put my bum on the sand. I was probably in half a metre. Went to go put my fins on, and a shark just got me. Just went bang, bang, straight on my knee, which is a critical part for the leg.
I am a feelings nurse, but I do remember that day in nursing school. Yeah, I can concur.
There's a whole
connected to the thigh bone and the shin bone.
It's the right, Dr. Nick. And I'm not just trying to be tough, but it didn't hurt that much because you're in shock. And it was a reef shark, so it was like a metre and a half. That's why I say it wasn't an attack. You say shark, people think jaws. You know, it was, you know, it could have been an eel that did the same damage, and people wouldn't be think it's so dramatic. But the dramatic thing was
we'd still be asking you about an eel attack, don't worry. Yeah.
In fact, it might have been cooler if you had.
Can we make that for the purpose of the story?
Yeah, yeah. But the dramatic thing was Palmerston, where we were, was 500 km north of Rarotonga, and you cannot fly there. You cannot take a helicopter. It's too far for a plane to land. There's no scheduled shipping, and so the journey to get to hospital took 8 days. So that was the. But I was there. I stood up. I was like, I've been bitten by a shark, but obviously more screamy, And my mate James, who's like kind of my mate but kind of like my muse, he's a legend, put my leg straight in a tourniquet, and then they put me in the back of a, sort of a lawnmower thing, took me to the closest hospital, which was kind of a hospital but also kind of just like a room with some Panadol.
That's essentially what a hospital is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and then I just but had amazing care from the local nurse there and from our team. We had the doc kit, had all the first aid stuff that we needed, lots of antibiotics, lots. We had to whack betadine on there with like anti-inseptic cream, which you could hear it sizzling. It was quite, that hurt quite a lot. Screamed like a girl. Girls, boys. Anyway, got carried away. And 2024. And then, so I just had to sit there with my leg up for a week. Yeah. And then, so we had to charter a boat. We had to send out a Mayday there was no one could come. Like, we tried to get the Air Force and the Navy. They were all flat out busy with important things. And then, yeah, we ended up chartering a boat, like an enormous 65-metre vessel. like, you know, those ones you get onto Littleton, and they're like, whoa, that's a big boat, one of those. Came just to pick up me. And they... And like they had to like put the crane over the side of the boat, and it was like it was all pretty. It was a bit of a laugh, and because by that time, because we had like taken care of the infection, I was actually starting to feel pretty good. I could hobble around a bit. Like I had a wheelchair on the island. I had crutches, but I wasn't allowed to take them with me because they couldn't. If someone else got bitten, they wouldn't have any crutches.
Even though they've been in 106 years. Yeah.
It's kind of a shark kit.
Yeah.
But not
but because the whole I was like, oh, I didn't want to leave because it was this cool project we were doing. But yeah, if you get an infection in your knee, you lose your knee. And so they sent me away. So yeah, they sent me away and made it back to, they said it was probably a bit serious for Rarotonga, so they sent me to Middlemore. Finally arrived at Middlemore after this like arduous journey, and Mum met me at the airport, and we hobbled up to the thing, and the lady said, "Dad, what brings you here today?" And I said, "You wouldn't believe it. I've been bitten by a shark." And she goes, "Is this the first time you've been bitten by a shark?" Yeah, it is. Yeah.
What do you think would happen if you said, "Nah"?
So we got through all of that stuff.
Oh, maybe they would have sent you to the feelings nurse. if it had been your second
wife. Has the shark talked to you in your mother's voice?
Yeah, and then actually the original plan was for to get it, poke a camera in and making sure it wasn't infected, but the doctor was like, nah, it's actually looking pretty good, so back to Invercargill, your not hometown. Yeah.
So you got deported to Invercargill. Why did they send you to Invercargill?
Are you not all been through you dissing other provinces, man?
No, I'm not. But you're from Te Anau.
Oh, I was living in Invercargill.
Right, you're working for the Kakapo Project.
Oh,
and then you were on Palmerston.
Oh, it's a lot. It's a boring cross. We can get into the details if you want.
Get a map. I think we need a map. Yeah, I think
we'll short-term contracts.
Yeah, we'll end the geography there. Yeah.
Do you want to offend Invercargill?
Yeah. It's right. No.
Time zone's the same. It's okay.
Yeah.
But look, it was, you know, after that that you still went and had a crack at Revenant afterwards. You know, was there a consideration of maybe I shouldn't because I've had my leg bitten by a shark, or you know, how did that deal with your head in terms of being able to compete and race?
Well, it just took it as it comes, eh? Because it wasn't infected, it healed quite quickly, and so then it was just like, I'll go for a little run. You know, it feels all right. It feels like you can feel there's a little bit of scar tissue, and it felt a little bit funny, but. And then all of it was like, because I initially called Scott, the director of Revenant, and be like, sorry, mate, can't come. But then I rang him back to say, actually, no, it's not feeling too bad. So my training took a hit, but it's the Revenant's probably, obviously you need to have certain fitness, but it's more, in my mind, more about nav and just getting stuck in, I think. So, yeah. It was okay. I was pretty stoked to do three laps, which is one lap more than what I'd done the previous year. And had lots of fun, and yeah. Yep.
What's harder, Revenant or Shark? We could go list all of them if you want, but it's a binary. Revenant or Shark?
Revenant. That's for you, Scott.
Bob Graham. Bob Graham or Shark?
Bob Graham or Shark?
Shark.
Okay, cool. If you're plotting a graph, that's... Yeah.
Hey, look, thank you so, so much. Really appreciate it. Give him a round of applause. I'll try not to trip over cables. Right. A question we often get asked is favourite episodes. One of yours, Matt?
Zach Friedley. Anyone ever listen to the Zach Friedley one, which is you can get stories that kind of take unexpected turns, but a dude who ended up he was born with a disability. He was born with the above the knee missing and part of his right hand, and then went on and became a championship wrestler because he and both the Troy and Zach, when we spoke to these athletes, it took him a couple of years to work out he was different from other kids. When kids were like, sort of over the age of four, like, you've got no leg. And he was like, oh, true, I don't. And and that's how he described it. But this guy ended up going on like this quest. He became this champion wrestler, and then he tried to get into the Paralympic track team in the US, and worked out that just because you have a blade, that doesn't mean you're going to be an Olympic sprinter. Like, he fully acknowledged that. He ended up, has anyone seen Murder Mountain on Netflix? About the weed growing in Humboldt County, the illicit weed farms. It's called, yeah, you've seen it. You're my 13-year-old daughter. I'm a terrible parent. Well, how have you seen that? Yeah, no, that's a true thing. Yeah, I'm a terrible parent. So he ended up in Humboldt County, harvesting weed with one leg. And I said, oh, was it so good? And everyone was really harmonious. He goes, no, I look like a green beret that's had my leg blown off, and I drive around in like a big black Chevy Suburban. And they basically were like following me around the whole time, thinking I was a feared. And then he went on this vision quest. It was one of the most sort of odd conversations I've ever had. But now he's doing incredible things and is a professional trail runner.
We caught up with him this year.
Yeah. So he's a firm favourite. Mm. What about you?
Yeah. Sophie Power. So I don't know if you've seen the famous footage of her breastfeeding at UTMB, and she, she's sort of taken it on to fight for, because her point was, everyone sort of reacted to that as being, oh yeah, go you, and she was like, I shouldn't have had to be there. If the organisers had let me defer my race, I would have. I was only there because I had to. So, you know, thanks, but can't we do better? And so she was an amazing, amazing interview. I love chatting with her. But I think our, you know, like, talk about take a long time to get there interview is out this week.
Yeah. Greg Hamilton kept us on red for 5 years. In fact, he didn't keep us on red. He said no to us for 5 years because we emailed him. 4 or 5 years. In fact, I owe you $10 because we had a bet. I was like, he's never going to come on. We should not actually interview him. So it's up to you. It's on you, because I was like, he's never going to come on just because he's finished Barclay. Like, he's going to be like, I've done it now.
They were polite rejections, I could tell.
They were very polite rejections. Yeah.
But anyway, we did get to chat to him this week. And if you've listened to the interview, you can't tell. But at the end, we were sort of like, we'd said to him, okay, look, maximum an hour. We won't keep you any more than that. Don't worry.
He didn't have his camera on. So he's that shy. He did not have his camera on. Like, has, video
yep, no, yep, okay. No, no. But we'll get you out of there in an hour. Sweet as. Okay, no worries. We'd seen the chat he did with Gary Robbins, and he was quite like, yes, no, yes, maybe. And we thought, okay. So we strategized, planned, came up with a bunch of questions. We got to the end. It was like 59 minutes and 46 seconds. We're like, okay, thanks, we're done. Cheers, you know. Turned the recording off, and he went, did you get through all your questions? Is there any more you want to ask? Like, what? We did not expect this. So we turned it back on again and got a few more questions in. So, yeah.
And then he sent us that photo. So he sent the photo that he sent us was him from about 200 feet away on a mountain. So he couldn't actually tell that it was him. Like, and he was like, this was the only photo I was going to send you. And it's just incredible. It speaks to anyone know Greg?
A few people here, yeah.
A few people. So it speaks to the man's quality. So what a way to...
A good sense of humour.
Amazing sense of humour. And I have to say, actually, this is pretty damn special.
Yeah.
Being here with you and with all of you, and seeing what a shambles this is face to face. Not this, us, me, wearing a hoodie under these lights. And, oh, God, it's like a primary school nightmare. stop focusing on the fact you're sweating so much. Okay. But thank you all so much for being here.
That's us. Thanks very much.
Thanks for coming.
Right,
That's it for this week. Thank you to our DCR 8 station crew, you lot. Stay tuned for the quote-unquote regular DCR podcast next week when we have another amazing guest lined up for an incredible chat.
Hei kona, hei kona.
Thanks, Rigby.